Hello everyone and welcome once again to Boat Briefing, our podcast where we discuss the biggest stories in super yachting and bring you interviews with various interesting characters from our world. My name is Stuart Campbell, I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and I am joined as ever by Caroline White, Deputy Editor of Boat International, and Charlotte Hogarth-Jones, our Features Director. But first, it's been a bank holiday here in the UK, so how was it for you guys?
Yeah, it was great. Just soaking up the very last rays of British sunshine before the grey clouds close in around us again.
Yeah, no sunshine for me, I'm afraid. A little bit. I was up in Yorkshire in the countryside, and it's so beautiful around there. And we did try and go to the beach like everyone else in the UK. We tried to go to Robin Hood's Bay, but like every other British seaside town, it was absolutely swamped. And it was a nice trip, but I have to say, I'm looking to the time I can get on a plane again and get back out on a boat somewhere guaranteed to be significantly hotter.
Yeah, the silver lining, I suppose, this time of the season in the UK is that you think, oh, it's okay, it's not too bad. I'm going to escape to the Monaco Yacht Show, maybe get a few days at Cannes. Porto Cervo might be thrown into the mix, and ultimately there's Fort Lauderdale. So you think, well, you know, you can do winter because you know you can escape winter, but not so much this year. So it's going to be a bit relentless and grey for the next couple of months, which is a shame. Well, hopefully September's going to be nice. We'll see.
How about you?
It was great. Thank you. It was really good. Only mildly spoiled by a TV show I caught before the bank holiday. It was called Secrets of the Luxury Super Yachts. It was on Channel 5. You can probably guess what my impressions of it. I had no idea it was on. I just caught it while flicking through.
What was it like? I feel like you're about to let rip on some giant rant.
Yeah, well, I have to ask, why do all these shows about super yachts have to be quite so awful?
Yeah, there was one a couple of years ago called Million Pound Mega Yachts, and you just knew from the title that it was going to be incredibly cringeworthy.
Cringeworthy is a good adjective. So there was another one on Channel 5 not so long ago. When I was looking into it, there was something called The Most Luxurious Yacht. So I watched it for this, and again, it's a similar kind of vibe. They just don't do our industry any favours whatsoever.
Yeah, I know what you mean. None of them really paint a very accurate or flattering picture, do they?
They really don't. And the problem is the programming just comes across as a bit cheap and tacky. That's just not the story of the super yacht industry. At no point do any of these shows seem to celebrate the brilliant minds in this business, from the naval architects to the designers to shipyards overcoming impossible engineering challenges, to the craftspeople installing the most incredible interiors on the planet, or the people discovering new sustainable materials or techniques, or, you know, the entire towns this industry supports. It seems to me these program makers, their pitch to TV commissioners is, we'll talk about what everything costs, even though we'll mostly get it wrong, but who cares, and we'll do our best to make everyone look as foolish as possible. And the narration, I've got a real problem with the narration of these shows. It's just unbearable. It's always slightly mocking and incredulous. For me, I think there needs to be a moratorium on cooperating with these shows. It does us no favours. They're not representative. Well, I suppose they are representative of people's perceptions of super yachting. And all these shows are doing is reinforcing them. But perhaps, maybe I'm being naive to think there's an audience for programming about this industry that's not just bling and money. Anyway, sorry for that little diatribe about programming on Channel 5 about our industry. Write in and tell us if you agree. podcast@boatinternationalmedia.com. That's it. Rant over. On with the news. And sadly, it's not all good. The Maxi Yacht Rolex Cup and the Swan Cup, Rolex Swan Cup, have been cancelled due, the YCCS said, that's the yacht club, Costa Smeralda, said, to a significant increase in the infection curve due to several outbreaks in the Costa Smeralda area and in Porto Cervo in particular. So that's obviously really hard news to take for all those boats and crews and owners that were out in Porto Cervo looking forward to, the first significant regatta, super yacht regatta of the year, really, since the Antigua Super Yacht Cup way back in February or March. So, you know, it's been a washout this summer for very understandable reasons. But this was a moment we were going to do some racing, but sadly not. Mets Trade as well in Amsterdam in November has been cancelled. Caroline, you've got the news on that.
Yeah, so it's the first time in 32 years that the show has been cancelled, again, for understandable reasons. Metz Trade's maritime director, Niels Klarenbeek, described the cancellation as a tough blow, but said that it was the only right decision that they could make. I think the idea was that they wanted to put on a really high quality show with lots of face-to-face contact, and that obviously just isn't possible in the current climate. So they decided to stop it, which is fair enough.
Well, we're on the theme of cancellations. Charlotte, what can you tell us about charters at the moment?
Well, I guess it's not bad news if you're looking to book a charter. Basically, since April, there have been various cancellation policies kind of changing and evolving as people have been adapting to this new environment. And there are some interesting deals around it. For some brokers, so if you take Burgess as an example, they've got certain policies that applies to certain yachts. So if you look on their special deals page, like I had a look this morning, they're actually, it's a lot of boats. It's a high percentage of them. And there are some fantastic yachts that this applies to. So there's things like the 80 meter Excellence, 70 meter Joy, the beautiful old 1926 boat Fair Lady. And all of those boats, plus many others, have this policy that if you cancel for any reason up to 21 days before the start of the charter, you can get a full refund. And if it's within 21 days of the start of the charter and you have to cancel because of a COVID-related reason, you can get a full refund for that as well. And lots of brokers are doing similar things. Wyco's got a number of yachts and has a similar policy. Some of them are kind of signed up to it. And they've also done something which means the initial deposit you put down for those boats is less than it would normally be. So instead of putting down the 50% payment, you'll put down 30%, which is obviously a bit easier to stomach if you're a bit concerned. Some other charter companies, you know, everyone's doing different things. Some people are just taking on a case-by-case basis. And it's also worth noting that if you book through an MYBA broker, they added a contract addendum that allows for penalty-free cancellations. So it's worth asking the charter company when you're booking Fraser, for example. I know if you book through one of those brokers, they're adhering to that addendum in the contract, as is Wyco. So not all the yachts are signed up to their sort of special policy, but some of them are signed up through this MYBA broker addendum. So basically, the short story is it's not all doom and gloom if you're looking to book something. Brokers and charterers are being a lot more flexible about it. And hopefully that will mean people will take a few more risks and take a punt on late this year, early next year.
So it sounds like the brokerage community has been quite responsive to the crisis.
Yeah, definitely. I think obviously it's difficult because they're liaising with owners of boats and there are numerous parties involved. But I think the bottom line is that everyone's trying to be as flexible as possible. And people are understanding that the future is so uncertain, they need to have policies in place that make people feel more confident in booking. And that's happening, which is great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about some of the new boats hitting the water. Caroline, you've been scanning the headlines over at boatinternational.com. What can you tell us?
Well, in particular, we've had a couple of interesting sailing yacht launches. So Solaris Yachts has launched their largest sailing yacht to date. That's the 33.7-metre Solaris 111. And I'm going to say this wrong. Sephia?
Kefia?
Kefia.
I'm going to go Kefia. I don't know.
That's the best explanation I've heard so far. So, yeah, we'll go with that. It's been described as a race machine with the comforts of a premium super yacht by the yard. Her hull and deck are constructed from prepreg carbon. She's got a lift and keel, and she's designed for world cruising as well as obviously racing. She features a Southern Spars mast, Future Fibres rig, and sails by Doyle. And she's got, in terms of super yacht comforts, a full beam master cabin with two separate bedrooms and direct access to the beach club, which sounds very fancy.
So biggest boat to date from Solaris Yachts. That'll be good. We're hoping to get on that boat, get on her for sale, obviously, yeah, Sometime soon, hopefully.
Yeah, we are. We're already in contact with the yard, so that's on our radar, and hopefully that'll be in an issue of the magazine in coming months. So keep an eye out for that. Also, in the last week, we've had the third hull in Southern Wind's SW96 series, Ammonite, has been launched in Cape Town, where the yard is, built for a passionate yachtsman called Marcus Blackmore, who some of you may have heard of before. It's been described as the perfect blend of the first two hulls in the series, Sorceress and Seatius. That's another one I can't pronounce, S-E-A-T-I-U-S. That's due for delivery in late September, and it's going to head to Australia and then on to New Zealand to compete in the Millennium Cup.
I interviewed Marcus fairly recently for we did a series, a lockdown series, video interview series called At Home with Boat, and Marcus was one of my victims. I could listen to Marcus talk all day. He's just the best raconteur. He talks about cruising in the Pacific, being made an honorary chief of a tribe out in some distant island. Just a brilliant, brilliant bloke. So if you're listening and you want to listen to more of Marcus's wonderful stories about his time cruising on his various boats and racing with other Aussie superyacht owners like Neville Crichton, although he's a Kiwi, I take that back. He's a Kiwi. We'll get letters. Anyway, the video's there on YouTube. Just search for Marcus Blackmore At Home with Boat. It's a brilliant interview. What a guy. Great. A lot of time for Marcus.
So in other news, slightly less positive, we've heard of a fire on Lady MM, which is an ISA yacht that was delivered in 2003. She was travelling from Capri to Porto Cervo in Sardinia. She issued a distress signal at around 6 a.m. on August 26th. Patrol boats and a Coast Guard helicopter came to help. And the helicopter actually got some really shocking images and video of the boat on fire from the air. There were 17 people on board, 9 crew and 8 guests, all of whom were evacuated safely using a tender. So I think everybody's okay. We don't currently know the status of the yacht itself.
Pictures were absolutely shocking. They always are of a superyacht fire, but it's, horrendous to see.
Well, on a slightly lighter note, well, happier note anyway, in terms of brokerage, slightly happier note, we've seen 32 sales on the brokerage market in August, which will probably go up more as sales are announced in the next few weeks. But that is in comparison to 19 sales in August last year. So 32 August 2020, 19 August 2019. So that 32 figure is the biggest August figure since 2015, which is pretty wow. Good news. We've heard anecdotally from brokers about people buying boats unseen because of the problems with visiting, flying around and that sort of thing. And we've also heard a lot about people wanting to have more socially distanced holidays on board. So buying a yacht is obviously the best way that you could possibly do that. We also have heard from brokers that there was a lot of pent up demand from the summer when the industry was quieter and society as a whole was largely shut down. So that's the kind of pent up demand. And it's good to see that rather than just dissipating entirely, that's just been moved forward to a later month. Overall, we are down on 2019. So 2019, the figure to August was 270. And at the moment, we're on 226, which, considering what's happened, doesn't seem to me too horrific a number.
So let's just restate that. So to the end of August in 2019, there had been 270 yachts sold on the brokerage market. And this year, the number's 226.
Exactly.
Okay. Oh, well, I mean, that August figure is incredible. I wasn't expecting that at all. That's a genuine surprise.
Yeah.
32 brokerage sales in August. Wow, there's some happy brokers out there.
Yeah.
I know I was speaking to a few people from the community. They were saying some houses have had, pretty good summers, very, very respectable summers. So that's great. Great to see.
Yeah.
Boats are moving.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've heard a lot from brokers about the fact that because a lot of people were sitting at home with perhaps less social things to do than they might normally have done, they spent a lot of time thinking about what they might like to buy in terms of a boat, whether that's to commission something to be built or to buy something that's already been built. So perhaps this is a result.
I can't imagine buying a boat unseen. Is that common? Is that surely that's a recent thing other than in these sort of extenuating circumstances?
Yeah, I mean, all we know is, as I say, anecdotal stories from brokers about what clients are willing to do now that perhaps they weren't willing to do in previous years. So I'm afraid I don't have any specifics on that, but that's what we've been hearing.
But it's definitely unusual to buy a super yacht without stepping on board and inspecting it personally, or at least having a representative inspect it. That's strange, but you know, sign of the times, I suppose. And we know smaller boats are flying off the shelves. Our executive editor in the US, Cecile, sent us a report the other day about small boat sales over in the States. And they're humming. It's going really well in the small boat market, again, for exactly the same reasons. People just stuck at home thinking, how can I escape this? Boat's the obvious choice. So if you're somewhere near the water and you got the resources, buy a boat. That's our advice. Take it from us. Bigger the better. Bigger the better. So I hope you guys saw the lovely picture of the Amel's Gene Machine sitting under the Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor the other day. So Gene Machine's up in New York, which is coordinated quite nicely with a big interview with her owner, Jonathan Rothberg, which appeared in the New Yorker magazine. And the reason for the interview was because he's trying to bring to market an easy home test COVID kit. His 2020, I loved what is in the interview. It's brilliant. His original 2020 plan had been to use one of his newer companies to trawl for genetic evidence. I know I'm going to say this wrong, panspermia, the not entirely disreputable idea that life on Earth arrived in the form of ancient space dust. So that's what he was going to spend his 2020 doing. But quite nobly, instead, he switched focus to develop this kind of easy at-home COVID test. And how's he getting on? Charlotte, you read the interview and made some notes. So what can you tell us?
Well, I mean, we've all had to change our plans, him included. But he's actually got a background in this sort of thing. So Rothberg's developed a couple of things in the sort of healthcare sector already. He developed a sort of portable MRI and an at-home ultrasound machine that have both been very successful. So he sort of specializes in medical kit for the home and for ordinary people to use. And his wife is also a physician, so he has that kind of insight from her. And it was fascinating to read about. The aim of this test is something that you kind of do on the spot. You'll time it on your phone. Instead of costing hundreds of dollars, it's only going to cost $10. So it's accessible. And in the sort of ideal world, you'll be able to buy it in sort of US stores like CVS and pharmacies and grab it off the shelf. And it's a very long article. It's fascinating hearing about the sort of complexities of all the different stages that have to happen for the test, and how difficult it is to get to simplify it so that, you know, your average Joe can do it on his own without fluffing it up. So his team have had their work cut out trying to make it sort of idiot proof and as streamlined as possible so that anyone can do it. One of the things about it that I thought was interesting is there's no super long swab. I don't know. Have either of you had a COVID test yet?
Yes.
You have? And? Presumably don't.
I didn't have it. No, we were getting married a couple of weeks ago and we both got tiny little coughs and got quite paranoid, went to have it. It's not fun, I have to say.
Yeah. And it's due. Well, you did?
No, I had to administer one to my 8-year-old daughter, which was an absolute nightmare. We were part of that. Health Secretary Matt Hancock was trying to hit his 100,000 tests a day target. So our daughter was included randomly in that 100,000. And so we got it through the post. And it was not an easy test to administer to an 8-year-old. I can tell you that. There was lots of squirming involved as I tried to stick this massive swab up her nose. Yeah. I think I could completed it to some basic level of competency. Happy to say she didn't have it, of course. But yeah, not easy. Not easy at all. So if there's a better solution, let's all get behind Jonathan Rothberg.
Well, yeah, the long swab is a bit of a game changer. It is supposed to be supremely horrible. I've got some friends that work in China that have just had to go through it. Anyway, Rothberg's version uses a swab that works in the lower nostril, which is good partly because it's less unpleasant and partly because the long swabs are really hard to get hold of and there's sort of short supply of them. Anyway, it's definitely worked for him. He was kind of testing it on the yacht. They were isolating and anyone that was coming on board, they were trying out the prototype on. And he had a replacement chef that was due to come on board. His prototype test showed that he had corona. This was verified by a separate test in the lab. So it stopped his family and his crew from all getting infected on board. And his suggestion, he's confident that it works, but his suggestion is that it could be used with other tests. So maybe everyone's buying this one, but if you were a particularly at-risk person or if you were pregnant, you might then send off for a lab version that might take a few days to come back to you. So it's very exciting. We'll be following that very closely to see if it hits the shelves.
There you go. There's one of the brilliant minds of super yachting that I was talking about before. See, why can't you get
Jonathan? Yeah, exactly.
Focus more on the Jonathan Rothbergs of our industry. Anyway.
You can take it to Channel 5, Stu.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure they'll be into it. We just got the Marine Industries Association of South Florida, just very quickly, put out a release the other day on August the 28th, saying that they are pushing on with FLIBS. So FLIBS, according to them, is still very much going ahead. But we also know for individual exhibitors who won't be there, which will obviously impact the show. Heesen won't be there. Marine Max, Hatteras, Ferretti haven't committed yet. Hargrave aren't sure. And there's a few others too. So look, there's no official list of people who won't be going. We're just hearing bits and pieces. Westport, also Fraser, Triton Submarines. So it's going to be a very different experience, isn't it? It's not going to be the show we all know and love with such big names not turning up. But there is, as of today, still going to be a Fort Lauderdale International Boat Show. I guess we'll have to wait and see what kind of show it turns out to be. And that's about it for this week's news. Again, as ever, just a reminder, let us know any thoughts about the podcast or things you'd like to hear us discuss. It's podcast@boatinternationalmedia.com, and one of myself, Charlotte, or Caroline will get back to you. But Caroline, now it's over to you to talk about this week's interview. You sat down with Jasper Smith, the founder of Arxen. Can you tell us a bit more about Arxen and tell us a bit more about what you guys discussed?
Yeah, so it's just been announced that Arxen is sponsoring the Yacht of the Year Award at the 2021 edition of Boat International's Ocean Awards. Nominations for the awards have now opened, so do take a look on our website for more details about those. The Yacht of the Year Award recognises ocean conservation efforts by a yacht and the crew, and it includes a cash prize. So, interestingly, the award echoes the ethos of Arxen itself, which is a new explorer yacht brand that aims to minimise the impact of its vessels on the environment. So there's a lot of synergy there. So I spoke to Jasper a little bit about the ethos of Arxen and also the award itself. So here is me and him. So, Jasper, can you tell me a bit more about your background? I understand that you came from tech and gaming, working with brands like PlayStation. So Explorer Yacht seems like quite a change from that.
Yeah, sure. No, it is quite a change. Great to be here and great to talk to you, Caroline. I trained as a sculptor originally. So I was always really interested in narrative and storytelling and you know, how you might achieve that through art. And unfortunately, I was useless. And so pretty quickly had to change careers. And I was lucky enough to be involved in the setting up of Sky and a few other big businesses. And out of that came an interest in games. And so I built a company called PlayGem, which for a very short period was one of the world's largest games companies, building casual games for mobile and other platforms. There aren't many parallels between the games industry and the marine industry, but I think there's a lot that you can draw on from the games and the tech industry that can influence, you know, what happens in the marine industry over the next sort of, you know, decade or so.
Yeah. Well, can you tell us a bit about that? What do you think could be brought from that industry into the superyacht industry?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, games are generally about, as I said earlier, about a narrative. And, you know, within game theory, you're predicting outcomes all the time. You know, you're trying to understand where a player might go and you know, how those players might interact with objects or other players. And a lot of that actually feeds into things like how autonomy might work and, you know, predictive AI and and machine learning are really at the core of those initiatives. And you know, the marine industry generally has been quite slow to adopt new technologies. That's largely because there's been a lack of investment into the industry, because you know, big venture capital groups or small venture capital groups for that matter have found the marine industry unattractive as an investment space because it seemingly lacks scale. I think we took a very different approach. I guess the sort of core is that technology is a really fundamental part of the transition of the marine industry over the next few years, and the learnings from the game industry I think are pretty key toward in the drive towards autonomy and greater data gathering and collection and understanding over the next few years.
So you mentioned there that Arxen took a different approach. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think any new business that starts has an obligation to, and it's not just new businesses, I think every business has an obligation to the environment and to society to try and build the best business it can and to have a front and central its impact on the environment and to be fully cognizant and aware of what's happening with climate change. And so in setting up Arxen, we tried to do a couple of things fairly differently. One was to really understand the supply chain and make sure that the vessels that we were building were completely recyclable or as recyclable as possible, and that they were built with a circular economy in mind, and that we understood the supply chain in a way that perhaps is unusual in the industry. That was the first point. The second point was that, you know, having owned boats for many years, most of those boats have sat in marinas pretty underutilized for much of the year. And it seemed to me that, you know, the ocean is a fundamentally misunderstood ecosystem, and that it's largely misunderstood because we haven't got enough research being done. We had, the research fleet around the world is something like 37 vessels. We started thinking about how could we change, that behavior? How could we change the sort of needle there and create a much larger fleet, if you like, of marine research capable vessels, and empower scientists and conservationists and things like that to get involved. And so that was the other thing, is really drive the utilization for science and conservation through the Arxen Foundation and use philanthropy as a key driver of change in ocean research.
Okay, so just talking about the supply chain, could you tell us a little bit more about how you are more cognizant of that than perhaps other brands in the past have been?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no perfect. And so, and there's, there's plenty of greenwashing and things like that. And so I think it's really just looking through the supply chain and trying to understand the provenance of raw materials. That's where it starts, So where's the, the basalt from in the aluminium? And, what's the smelting process? What are the sources of energy? And essentially, we are not an aluminium manufacturer, and we're a mining company. And so you're really just reliant on working with the supply chain to ensure that, A, they understand the importance of the provenance of product, and, to ensure that, there's no slavery used and that it's a fairly and ethically sourced product. So we work with, the big aluminium companies, and we try and, keep them on point and work with them to create a marketplace for products that are recyclable or that are made from recycled materials. I think, the other side of it is looking at how we do the interiors of these vessels. So they are largely built from recycled materials, whether that's recycled plastics or stones or woods, or where they can't be built from recycled materials, they're built from material sources that are sustainable and ethical. And I think it's just a fundamental obligation for every company to do exactly what we're doing. I don't want Arxen to be different. I want Arxen to just be a benchmark for what we should be trying to do as an industry.
And then turning to the other plank of the project that you mentioned in terms of creating a larger fleet of research vessels, basically, from yachts. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, it's a travesty that the ocean covers, you know, the vast majority of our planet and that we understand so little about it. And, you know, when you look at the reasons why, it comes from a fundamental lack of infrastructure to do that research and capital. And so, you know, my other hat, obviously, is, you know, I run a venture capital group as well. And so, you know, with trying to bring a love of the ocean and an understanding of finance together gives us an opportunity to do some really exciting things. So, you know, the overriding ambition with ourselves and other partners is to create a platform for science and to enable, you know, marine biologists all over the world to have access to the ocean in a way perhaps that they haven't had before. And that doesn't mean we're operating, you know, enormous research ships like the wonderful Rev and things like that. You know, we don't have that sort of capability, but you know, we have a fundamentally strong, very robust platform that enables a huge plethora of research to be done. And you know, our vessels are built for very long term journeys and passages, and you know, they have exceptional range and they have all sorts of other great assets on them that are useful for research. So you know, the aim is to build that research platform out, to work with partners to increase that, and you know, to facilitate a whole new generation of science and hopefully from that better education, better understanding, better lobbying tools for government, you know, and to try and create sort of systemic change through that whole policy network to try and protect the ocean over the next 20 years.
Okay. And then talking about your boats, getting on there to your boats, I understand that the first Arcsin 85 is in build at the moment. Could you tell us a little bit about that boat and how it embodies that eco-conscious ethos?
Yeah, so the vessel itself has been designed largely out of frustration because we couldn't find vessels of its kind. It's a true explorer yacht, but is you know, 85 feet. It's a relatively small explorer yacht in the super yacht space anyway. But it's truly capable. So, you know, it has, as I said, you know, 6,500-mile range. It has, aluminium construction. It has recovery from capsize. Should the worst happen, it's extremely stable and capable as a platform. Has space and capacity for provisions for multi-month missions, and has an extremely large rear deck that's capable of housing ROVs and any other type of equipment that an owner or a research project may need to take on board. So it's been designed really from the ground up to be a true, authentic and exceptional explorer vessel. And then in terms of our approach to building, the boat's being built in the UK, it's been designed in the UK. It's a project that's taken many, many years to bring together. And it's taken that long because of the amount of precision that we've tried to put into the vessel, and because we've taken a lot of care to make sure that the way the vessel is built is as sustainable as it possibly could be.
Okay, that's interesting. And in terms of the operation of the boat, could you tell us, is that green in any way? When you actually get the boat?
Yeah, it has a full hybrid system, so has silent running it depends on what hotel load you've got, but it has significant capacity for silent running. It has a full solar array, so you can run the hotel load pretty much on solar. So it's not, it's not driven by hydrogen, or it's not a solar-only boat. It's still burning fossil fuel, but it's burning it, we think, in the most efficient way. The hull design is exceptionally efficient, And, you know, combined with the hybrid system and the solar capacity that's there, it creates a package that, you know, mile for mile should use significantly less fossil fuel than its equivalent. And, you know, that, as I said, you know, it largely comes down to the design ethos of the product in the first place. So it's, you know, I guess one way of thinking about it is it's almost like a sailing yacht hull with a motor boat sort of built around it. And that gives it, you know, makes it very slippery and means that it's got, you know, great efficiency through the water.
Okay. And in thinking about upcoming events, I understand that you're planning the first Oxen Explorers Rally with the adventure specialist Pelorus, which sounds very adventurous. Could you tell us a bit more about what that will entail?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think like all these things, it's been knocked on the head a little bit by COVID, but the aim is to do the first Oxen Rally in 2022 now. I think, look, it's a great event. I mean, the idea is that, you know, more and more sailors want to go further. And, you know, sailors as a group are an adventurous lot. But it's great to sometimes go with a small group of people and just feel that you have that support and that, you know, camaraderie. And you know, the idea around the rally was really to try and give people the confidence, whatever boat they have. So it's not just for arts and boats, but whatever boat they have, to be able to go a little bit further afield, you know, be able to go, you know, up the coast of Norway, perhaps to Svalbard, perhaps over to Greenland. Those types of experiences that are rooted in history with, you know, elements of Nansen's journey and things like that. And so the idea was really to fuse history, great explorers, exceptional experiences, and to try and wrap around that all of the, you know, all of the infrastructure components, permits and things like that, that you know, people need to do these experiences.
Well, that sounds absolutely fascinating. So anybody who has an explorer type yacht could attend that?
Yeah, absolutely. There are some criteria they're available on the website. But, absolutely. It's available to really anyone who's a, you know, who's a dreamer, an aspirant explorer, an adventurer, anyone who's got a passion in their heart to go and do something more. This is the sort of event for them.
Okay, great. And speaking of exciting events on the horizon, could you tell us a little bit more about the Ocean Awards Prize for our awards ceremony, the Ocean Awards, and why that's important to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are very few people in the marine industry or very few sailors who aren't passionate about the ocean and conserving it. But we seem to do little to celebrate that as an industry, and so the aim of this was really to just say, you know, let's reward the people who are trying, you know, and let's try and create some momentum about that, and as an industry try and create some noise about the good work that we're doing. And you know, the idea was to celebrate the achievements of a single crew, single boat, single owner, because we felt that was a really good way of hopefully encouraging, you know, a wider group of people to, you know, to participate. We're really excited by it. I mean, I think it's a great, obviously a great set of awards anyway. It's great to be part of that. And, you know, we're really hoping that people will embrace this award and join in and then get drunk on the proceeds.
Fantastic. Not using plastic bottles, I'm sure. No. Thank you so much, Jasper. That was really interesting. And I should note that, as I said before, nominations for the 2021 Ocean Awards are now open. So if you go to boatinternational.com, you can get a few more details on that. Thanks again, Jasper, for joining us. And good luck with the rally, with the boat. And we look forward to seeing who wins at the Ocean Awards next year.
Great. Thanks, Caroline.
So that's it from this week's Boat Briefing podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe for your weekly dose of news from the super yachting world. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.